Now it's June, which for many means only one thing. It's time for Pride, a celebration of diversity and a time to honour and recognise the impact the LGBTQ community continues to have across the globe. And like any other celebration, music plays a big role. Music is also very effective at bringing a community together, especially in times of protest, which is at the root of what Pride is all about. Over the decades, the songs associated with Pride and the LGBTQ community have helped pave the way for a minority and give a voice to the voiceless. So to take a look at how these anthems have evolved, I'm joined by Cian Sullivan, host of the self-professed gayest show on radio, Club 96 on RT Pulse, and also known as the host of Sissy That Pod and Queer Classified Podcast. Cian, you're very welcome to the programme. Now, for those who might not know, give us a brief explanation of the origins of Pride and how it's come to be the celebration that it is.
Yeah, so Pride sort of, what we know of Pride today originated in the US in New York, based on the Stonewall riots, which took place in 1969 in June. I'm not necessarily an historian, but basically in Greenwich Village, there was a club that was raided by police, which ultimately ended in violence of the queer people who were in there who were fighting back. And that sort of riot emanated around the world and ricocheted, and a lot of other localities ended up having similar protests. But when the Pride in Dublin and in Ireland kind of originated back in, the first Pride parade was in 1983, but it was mostly motivated by the beating to death of Declan Finn in Fairview Park by four men back in 82. So then after that, in June 25th, 1983, so pretty much 39 years ago today, there was the first Pride parade, which kind of then ultimately grew into what we celebrate every year.
Okay, and Pride and music, which is the one I'm going for now, have they always been closely connected?
I guess in the beginning, when Pride was a lot more of a protest, I'm not sure if it was. I definitely think there is an element of music always being.
So hold on,
are
you saying it's less protest now, more celebration?
It tends to be, yeah. It's more party than protest now, and that is something that's definitely kind of a conflicting matter, because, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. There are still a lot of issues facing the queer community, and people sort of feel that sometimes Pride can be a bit corporate, a bit too much of a party, not as much of the protest. So in the party side of Pride, 100% music is there for celebration. But when it was more protest in the beginning, it wasn't as music-based.
Okay, well then let's take the two of the things you've said there. Would it be fair to say that Pride anthems are also protest songs because they're Pride anthems?
To a certain degree, like, I think when we get you some of the songs we'll be talking to today, there is always a sense of resilience and defiance in the songs. It mostly comes from queer people who sort of have had to negotiate a world in which they don't necessarily fit in, or they're negotiating rules that, you know, discriminate against them. So often songs that have a sort of an act of defiance, the disobedience, self-love, dreaming of a you know, more welcoming world to them. They're sort of the themes that run through Pride anthems. And so to a certain degree, they are a protest to the status quo, but they're not necessarily protest towards sort of governments.
Stuff. Okay, look, we're taking a look at the evolution of the Pride anthem. We're talking here with Cian Sullivan. So where do we begin, Cian?
All right, let's take it back to 1939, Judy Garland and Over the Rainbow. You know, The Wizard of Oz is so often interpreted as a sort of allegory for the queer experience. You know, you have Dorothy, who's dreaming of a more colourful world outside of her hometown. She gets blasted into this big colourful metropolis where she finds her own family, she finds people who accept her, but then ultimately she doesn't have to change herself to find the happiness within her. She realises that it was in her the whole time. And I mean, that is incredibly poignant to a lot of people and their queer experiences in terms of trying to find themselves. There's a lot of relation to that. And of course, like, the sort of signature song from Wizard of Oz is Over the Rainbow. And there's a strong correlation between Judy Garland and the Stonewall riots that we mentioned there. I mean, some historians dispute it, but Judy Garland's funeral took place on June 27th and the Stonewall riots were June 28th. And some people speculate that maybe it was, you know, the additional, you know, grief that the community were struggling to.
Wasn't there a story about that Gilbert Baker flag, something to do with this song as well? And that's why you might say this is the start of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Gilbert Baker, the creator of the Pride flag, which is a rainbow flag, as people will probably know, is said to have based it off the Over the Rainbow song as well, which is
Let's take a blast of this. For the young people who've never heard it, this is Judy Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, 1939.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Judy Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Let's jump forward 30 years and start in 69 this time. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the song I chose from this year is Barbra Streisand's Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl, where Barbra plays Fanny Bryce. My inclusion on this more so was to kind of get to the angle of Broadway and how Broadway has always been such a sort of safe harbour for queer people. You know, as far back as Mae West, you have gay men finding real synergy with these grand dames of Broadway, Patti LuPone, Angela Lansbury, Jennifer Holliday, Julie Andrews. And it's, you know, what I sort of talk about in the podcast a lot is trying to get to the essence of what is this queer appeal. And I really do feel that for these women who, you know, in a world dominated by men in the movie industry and Broadway, these women were like the stars of the show.
Yeah.
They gave these real sort of grand performances. They were very camp. There was jazz handsy. There was singing and dancing. And that, you know, really appealed to the sort of more expressive sentiments of sort of gay men. So we take Barbra. And Barbra sort of grew up in the sort of Broadway scene. She has a lot of sort of sensibilities that gay men appear to. She has a sort of camp performance, real twinkle in her eye. And this song is really one of her true signature songs. You know, we mentioned the act of defiance is really a sort of sentiment that appears in a queer anthem. This absolutely has that essence of defiance in it. And it also reflects Barbra's old her own story, because she was told repeatedly that she would not be successful because she wasn't beautiful enough, because her nose was too big. And she was like, I'm not going to change it. I have the talent. I'm going to be successful.
Okay, well,
and she was right.
Let's play a bit. Don't Rain on My Parade.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain. Fly, I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? I'll mark my band out. I'll be my and if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make.
Barbra Streisand, Rain on My Parade, 1969, Broadway legend, as you say, Cian. And let's just jump straight forward another 10 years, or well, nine. Gloria Gaynor, surely this is the apex of the whole thing, is it?
Well, that's it. I mean, I really believe that 1978 was the gayest year in music. You know, it's the peak disco era. Disco was a genre of music that was created by LGBTQ black and Latin American people who were poor, who just needed somewhere, you know, had to hustle a lot to make ends meet, and they just needed somewhere to let their hair down. And that's kind of where disco rose from it. And over the years, you have like the Jackson 5, Donna Summer, the OJs kind of, you know, popularizing disco. But it wasn't really until Saturday Night Live in 1977 where it really hit the full saturation, where the full of America was behind disco. And then you really reap the rewards of that in 1978. You have YMCA, you have Sylvester, the Bee Gees, Chic, Boney M. Really, really sort of gay, camp, extravagant music. And I think Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive really is the pinnacle of
play
that.
Here it is. I saw a documentary on that on TV just about 6 months ago or so. Have you ever seen that one? It's just about that one song.
No.
It's good. It's actually pretty good. It's a very good documentary, and Gloria Gaynor's in it and talking about the effect it's had and all the rest of it. And there was lots of great footage and all that. Richard E. Grant, if I remember rightly, did the narration. But the script he was given to do was really brought the thing down badly, I thought.
Okay.
Just completely like, what?
But and do they get into disco sucks in the documentary?
They do, yeah. In fact, they get into loads of stuff. They obviously, they go back to Stonewall as well and everything. But the point point is that Gloria Gaynor's pretty damn good in it too, and just what it did to the black community in America too, mm-hmm. in the South and all that kind of thing. Anyway, that's I Will Survive, 1978. Now, 1980, I'm Coming Out, Diana Ross. Was that specifically written for the gay community?
It was, yeah. So in a way that, you know, we've mentioned about these defiant anthems of Barbara and Gloria, you know, anyone can really interpret that in their own way. It could be somebody whose boss is overworking them, or somebody who's, you know, is coming out of a breakup. Whereas sure. I'm Coming Out was specifically written with that expression. I'm coming out of the closet, whether as gay or with someone's sexual orientation. It was explicitly written for that purpose. And it was inspired as such by Nile Rodgers, who used to regularly frequent Studio 64.
And 54,
apologies, Studio 54. And one time he was stood at the urinal doing his business, and he looked either side of him, and he was flanked by two drag queens dressed up as Diana Ross. And he realized, wow, these gay men really love Diana. Let me write a song for them. Yeah. And that's what I'm Coming Out went on to be.
Okay, we'll play a bit of that, Diana Ross. Cian Sullivan, Club 96 on Orchie Pulse, and the host of Sissy That Pod and Queer Classified Podcast. We're looking at the evolution of the Pride anthem. And Cian Sullivan, we've just reached what? We've got loads more to go, I'd say. So let's go through.
Just in the 80s now.
Okay, I'm coming out of that one there. Let's go to Queen then. I Want to Break Free. Is that the one?
Yes, this is in 1984. Again, you know, lyrically quite explicit in terms of the gay experience. I think it was originally described to be more of somebody in a relationship that they're trying to get out of. But I personally, when I, you know, hear the lyrics of the song, this is, to me, really reads as somebody, you know, that relationship was with their parents. Their parents are trying to force them into this heteronormative box that they want to, you know, break out of. And, you know, I think it's somebody who's saying, I've fallen in love with somebody, you don't like it, but it's who I am, and I want to break free of your reign, and I want to go be exactly who I am. And I think the fact that in the video, Freddie Mercury is bopping around the house doing the hoovering and drag certainly nods that there is an intent to represent a gay character.
Here it is. Queen, I Want to Break Free.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
Break Free, that is from Queen from 84. Let's go to 1986,
Keane. Cyndi Lauper, True Colours came out that year, and that's, I think, a song that kind of took on a meaning of its own once it was released, because it was released, like I said, 1986, the peak of the HIV pandemic in the 80s. Gay men were not only a victim, you know, disproportionately of the virus, but it was also a victim of shame and a stigma associated with having contracted the disease, or maybe being at a risk of contracting the disease. And you know, the song's all about seeing someone's true colours beyond, you know, what the outer facade is, and loving them for that. And that really became an anthem of being able to see past someone's status and accepting them for who they are.
You with the sad heart, don't be discouraged, don't worry, realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. But I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors.
course, that went on to be the namesake for an LGBTQ homeless foundation set up by Cyndi Lauper called True Colours Fund. Now, I know you go 2 years forward and you have Tracy Chapman, Fast Car. I didn't know this. By the way, we are looking at the evolution of the Pride anthem. And Cian, tell me about this one.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, when we look at queer appeal, you know, we often have a tendency to look at gay men for dance pop, for disco songs, and that's the genre that tends to speak to them. And why does it speak to them? It's kind of hard to tell. Like, you can have five gay men growing up in different parts of the country and they'll all meet in a bar and they'll all love the same music somehow. Whereas there's a similar sort of tendency when it comes to queer women. They tend to enjoy more of sort of guitar folk pop. You know, obviously that's a huge generalization. Everyone has their own independent tastes. But there are these women who tend to really, these female performers who really tend to speak to queer women, like Katie Lang, Melissa Etheridge, Pearl, Phoebe Bridgers, and Tracy Chapman is one of them. And this song, Fast Car, that came out in 1988, you know, it's pitched as being sort of a woman trying to escape this circle of poverty.
Yeah.
But in many circumstances, many queer women found themselves related to this story because they may have been kicked out of their home. They were in that circle of poverty. And when Tracy was subsequently outed, people sort of concluded that the sort of genderlessness of their songs meant that she was probably singing about women, which is something that they'd kind of perceived themselves.
I got a job, pays all our bills, and sell drinking late at the bar. Some more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. Take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
Okay, Fast Car from 1988, that's Tracy Chapman. Let's get into the 90s, Cian.
Right, let's kick off with 1990. I mean, one of the first ones that comes to your mind, I'm sure, when you think of a gay anthem is Madonna's Vogue. When you spoke about documentaries earlier, Dave, have you seen Paris is Burning?
Paris is Burning, I have, yeah.
Yes, so Paris Burning captures the Brooklyn ballroom scene in the late 1970s, which was a scene of young LGBTQ black and Latino people, most of which were kicked out of their home. A lot of them were trans as well. And they used to just gather in these halls and dance. And one of the particular dance styles that they would do is Vogue.
Yeah.
So in 1990, Madonna released a song entitled Vogue with a video which emulated a lot of the dancing. And it was a bit controversial because it towed the line between was it appreciation, was it appropriation, is she taking this culture from these young gay black youths? But I think because Madonna's years of supporting the LGBTQ community, she kind of got off the hook for it, and it was taken in good grace. But again, the video is over the top, it's fashionable, it's glamour, it's extravagance, it ticks all the boxes.
It is 1990, that's Madonna with Vogue. So let's go to something completely different now, to 92. We'll go up another few years. Bikini Kill and Rebel Girl.
Yeah, so this song was one of the signature songs of like the mid-90s Riot Girl movement, which was an underground punk feminist movement, which was pretty anti-patriarchy and very pro-female empowerment. The lead singer of Bikini Kill, Kathleen Hanna, although she was straight, you know, her ideals and presentation really spoke to queer women who regularly have to fight against being seen by the male gaze or having to protest against female beauty standards. So they really, you know, identify with this sort of punk movement. And the song Rebel Girl itself is this sort of platonic idolization of this lesbian punk girl that the singer sees and really wants to be like. So on the when it comes to subject matter, it's quite on the nose in its queer appeal too.
That girl thinks she's a queen.
Rebel Girl, Bikini Kill. We're looking at the evolution of the Pride anthem. Let's go to the Eurovision in 1998. Song itself, I'd actually give it null points, but there you go. Just tell me about that 98 Diva, from Dana International, wasn't it?
Yes, and the song is Diva. And I guess let's touch on Eurovision itself. You know, Eurovision has amassed a lot of love from gay audiences. I think mostly starting from the 80s, it kind of began to get a bit more of a camp flourish. And then up by the 90s and 2000s, it kind of almost went over the top with its nod to novelty. But yeah, it sort of became this sort of second tier sort of gay event and became this event for gay men mostly in Europe to sort of go and enjoy. And in 1998, the competition had its first trans winner. And I just think, like, you know, trans issues are so controversial at the moment. Like, all you need to do is look at the news over the last few weeks to see what's going on in the country. And the fact that a trans woman won an international popularity contest.
Yeah, a quarter of a century ago.
Yeah, exactly. 24 years ago, I think, is so remarkable. And I just imagine the amount of conversations that took place around dinner tables, around the breakfast table the following day, I think was very monumental.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, let's go on then to the 2000s. Pink, Don't Let Me Get Me.
Sure. So in a way, you know, I think a lot of what we idolize as queer people comes down to a sort of femininity. And, you know, and gay men are often told to hide their femininity. And I think that's why we end up loving these hyper-feminine role models like Britney Spears or Madonna. And I think the kind of opposite end of the spectrum happens with queer women, where they kind of want to reject a certain level of femininity that they're told to perform as. And in 2003, when Pink sort of hit the scene with her album Misunderstood, the song Don't Let Me Get Me, I think, really encompassed the experience of sort of queer women. You know, let's look at the line: you'll be a pop star, all you have to change is everything you are, I'm tired of being compared to Britney Spears, she's so pretty, that just ain't me. You know, I think a lot of queer women saw Pink in comparison to her contemporaries of the Britney Spears, of the Christina Aguileras, who were performing this heightened femininity, and Pink was giving short hair and a sort of leatherette appearance. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, she, you know, she's representing us, she's representing this rejection of feminine
beauty.
This
is a song I don't know at all. Don't Let Me Get Me, here it is.
LA told me you'll be a pop star, all you have to change is everything you are, being compared to damn Britney Spears, she's so pretty, that just ain't me. Doctor, doctor, won't you please prescribe me something, a day in the life of someone else, 'cause I'm a hazard to myself.
Yes, I do know the song, but I thought that was Avril Lavigne when I heard it. Sorry, is that a bad thing to say?
You know, similar era, similar genre, I'll let you.
Yeah, you see, I just threw them all into the one thing. Sorry about that. Yeah, I didn't realise that. That's Pink. Okay, so let's go into the last decade then. Where do we go there?
Sure, yeah. So let's jump forward to 2011 and Lady Gaga's Born This Way. You know, another one that's explicitly a gay anthem. When Lady Gaga sort of rose to prominence in like 2009, 2010, with the Fame Monsters sort of era, she amassed a huge gay following amongst her little monsters, as her fans were called. And this is likely for her avant-garde fashions and that sort of electropop genre that she chose that we know the gay community love. So then when she, you know, she also actually revealed you know, and I'm a bit dubious sometimes about this, that she wasn't straight, that her song Poker Face was written about sort of same-sex fantasies. But there's no sort of visible queerness from Lady Gaga from over the years, so it's hard to know. But when she was releasing her second album, she wanted to specifically write a song for her LGBTQ fans. It had lines such as, no matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. And again, it's your message of defiance, it's your message of self-love. It ticks all the boxes.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola descent, you're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast, bullied or teased, rejoice and love yourself today, cause baby, you were born this way.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white or beige, Chola or Orient me, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave.
Is what it's called from Lady Gaga. Let's take a look at the last 5 years, Cian. Where do we start?
Yeah, so let's jump over to Sophie. Are you familiar with Sophie?
I'm not. No.
No, okay, cool. So Sophie is this Scottish producer. Unfortunately, we actually lost her in 2021 when she passed away at age 34. But she is known as this pioneer of hyperpop, which is incredibly flamboyant, over-the-top, computer-generated music, which is kind of really an embrace of the artifice. It has this brash synth melodies, auto-tuned, pitched-up vocals, and excessive use of compression and distortion throughout it. And it became a real sort of genre loved by the gay community, and then became picked up by other artists such as like Charlie XCX and Dorian Electra. So the sort of signature song from Sophie was Immaterial, and I said I'd add that to the list.
And I could be you. Life after life.
Time, right place, but I don't know what to say. It's not exactly Muddy Waters. I don't know. I'm not getting it. Okay, that's it.
I do appreciate I'm giving you songs that you probably would not listen to from one end of the year to the other, so I mean,
some of the earlier ones probably okay. Let's go Irish though next time from 2020. Pillow Queens.
Yeah, sure. I definitely wanted to include an Irish song in this, and I found it hard pressed to find a song by an Irish artist that was so explicitly LGBTQ expression. And so I can only really think of the 2020 track "Gay Girls" by Pillow Queens. Pillow Queens, of course, are a fantastic Irish four-piece of queer women, and I feel this song, you know, is all about expressing queerdom and accepting it.
There's
not
two
being
versions of this song, isn't there? There's a much more of a dancey version from Elaine May, no?
Elaine May, exactly. Elaine May provides a remix to this song, which kind of adds a sort of more gay bar flair to it. But the original as well is more lesbian core, if you want to call it. It's, you know, shoegazy guitars. It is sort of harmonized vocals. So I think between Pillow Queens and Elaine May, both, you know, LGBTQ Irish artists, they've sort of ticked both boxes. They've pleased both sides of the table with this song.
More.
Pillow Queens from Dublin. That's from 2020. Let's go to 2021 for the last one. Who's that, Ian?
Let's bring it right up to date. The one I wanted to choose is from Little Nas X, Montero, Call Me By Your Name.
The Old Town Road guy.
Absolutely, yes. So in 2019, after his hit Old Town Road came out, Little Nas X came out in Pride Month, actually, and hip-hop and R&B was kind of the last bastion of a genre that was yet to have this big gay star from it. And Lil Nas X went on to become that star. In 2021, Montero was his big comeback hit. And what kind of really sealed the deal was he was fully embracing his gay identity. He was fully, you know, putting gay images out in his music videos and his performances. And the video from Montero really sort of emphasized that. Nas said that when he was growing up, he was always told that gay people burn in hell. If you were gay, you know, you're going to go to hell and, you know, the devil and all that sort of stuff. So he said, fine, you know, I'm gay. I'm proud of being gay. In my video, I'm going to go to hell, and I'm so gay, I'm going to lap dance the devil. And that's exactly what he did.
Okay, listen, I'm going to play it now, Lil Nas X, Montero. So listen, Cian, thank you very much indeed for taking us through all that. Host of Sissy That Pod and Queer Classified Podcast, and host of Club 96, which is on Wednesday nights on RT Pulse at 8 p.m. Cian, thanks a million for talking to me today, and happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Good luck. Take it easy, Montero. I want to sell what you're buying.